1269 to join the conversation. Hello and welcome. It is now time for SDFO to VOIP. Please dial 929-299-1269 to join the conversation.
Welcome to the SDF conferencing system.
You are currently the only person in this conference.
VOIP 1269. VOIP 929-299-1269. VOIP 929-299-1269.
そろそろ、この番組は、ああ、違います。
This is Publix, inviting you to try something new. A long-form spoken word program. Hear now,
Hear now the words.
Join me, Tuesday and Fridays, at 15年 RSUTC. As I read
Hello,
for your
listening
t-shirt.
This hour is brought to you by the National Association for Amateur Radio. The ARRL has a bona fide interest in amateur radio.
Welcome to the SDF conferencing system.
There is currently one other participant in the conference. There is currently one other participant in the conference.
ดอยเถาบ้านเฮากันดานหมูเฮาจากบ้านไปหางานทำทำงานเซาะเบี้ยหาเงินลำบากเหลือเกินตากแดดหน้าดำทนเอาหนักเบาเช้าค่ำทนเอาหนักเบาเช้าค่ำมันแสนชอบช้ำทำงานหาเงินไอ้หนุ่มดอยเต่ามันเศร้าหัวจ๋อยคิดมาคิดไปมันน้อยจ๋อยแต้เล่าแต่ก่อนบ้านเฮาดอยเต่าเมื่อมาลำบากหนักหนาน้ำตาเฮาลอยพอถึงหน้าฝนเหมือนคนมีกรรมให้นาที่ทำน้ำท่วมทั่วป๋อยอดอยากแต่เล่าดอยเต่าเฮานี้เอ็นดูน้องปี้จับปอยพึ่งป๋อยพอถึงหน้าหนาวก็เหน็ด
เดือน6เดือน7ก็หอนเหลือจ่อยหน้าแล้งแห้งน้ำจะทำจะทำจะดอยจะไปที่ไหนน้ำกินบ่มีดอยเต่าบาเดียวบาเดียวเจริญเสาะเบี้ยหาเงินออกม้วนจ่อยม้วนจ่อยทางการทางการพัฒนาทำให้ไถนาไถนาแสนสบายสบายหนตังลาดยางลาดยางบะตอยหนตังลาดยางลาดยางบะตอยบ้านป่าบ้านดอยบ้านดอยมาถึงมาถึงดอยเถาบ้านเฮาบาเดียวหมูเฮาเก็บหมูเฮาเก็บเกี่ยวข้าวปลาข้าวปลาอาหารอยู่ดีกินอยู่ดีกินดีน้องปี้สัมปี้สัมหารข้าวปลาข้าวปลาอาหารสมบูรณ์สมบูรณ์ผลผลรัฐบาลรัฐบาลช่วยเหลือช่วยเหลือทุกคนบ่ออับบ่อจนบ่ออับบ่อจนทุกคนม้วนจ้อยม้วนจ้อยเปิ้นแบ่งที่ดินแบ่งที่ดินทำกินให้นาทำกินให้นาเลี้ยงปูเลี้ยงปลาปลูกผักปลูกผักปลูกม้อยพี่น้องพี่น้องจากดอยเต่าดอยเต่าปอยคอหือขัดใจขัดใจบ้านเสียบ้านเสียเด้อดอยเต่าบาเดียวบาเดียวเจริญเสาะเบี้ยหาเงินม้วนจ้อยม้วนจ้อยทางการทางการพัฒนาทำให้ไถนาไถนาแสนสบายสบายหนตังลาดยางลาดยางบะตอยหนตังลาดยางลาดยางบะตอยบ้านป่าบ้านดอยบ้านดอยไฟฟ้ามาถึง
0-VOIP-929-299-1269. O2VOIP 929 299 1269. Hello and welcome. It is now time for SDFO to VOIP. Please dial 929-299-1269 to join the conversation. to VOIP 929.
There is currently one other participant in the conference.
Well, that was really odd. I'm pretty sure I dialed 1088, but instead of getting the conference bridge, I got the free software song, whatever it's called. I was planning on doing my Twitch streaming this evening, but all day since I got up, I've been having muscle spasms in my neck, so that really discourages one.
There are currently two other participants in the conference.
This is not Publius.
Well, that's probably good, since it would be unwholesome to be talking to myself.
That's okay. So you had your show, right, today?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
All right. It's
chapters
in the archive,
3-5 of The Gods of Mars by Edgar Rice Burroughs.
Oh, okay. Classic.
Yep, still with the Red Martians.
Right. I think I heard you talk about on another Open VoIP about a cheesy book that you got, a title that was just kind of over the top, or...
Well, there's the thing that I've been alternating, and I had my last show, I included one chapter of it so people could get the flavor. Something called By Air Express to Venus, or Captives of a Strange People.
Yes. When was it written?
Well, the copyright date is 1928.
Oh. Well, did we really know what the atmosphere was like on Venus?
No, it's just that this particular, it's part of a series of juvenile pulp novels, I guess you'd say.
Okay, I see.
You know, with the sort of boy inventors and the aged scientist who aids and abets them despite all common sense. Apparently each of the novels has its own cheesy subtitle, you know, there's one in which there's some chunk of the Earth is torn away by an earthquake. I'm not sure how that happens. It's sort of vaguely like Jules Verne's off on a
comet. Oh, right.
Apparently
yeah.
It stays in the Earth's atmosphere, and there are little dwarves and giant grasshoppers who live there. I don't know. I'm only going by the references in this book to the various creatures that they made enemies of in their previous visits. Although I looked, and it appears that the several of the other books in this series are on Project Gutenberg. Not this if you look for Roy Rockwood, the author, apparently there's several of them. It was like blarg.
Blarg? Did you say blarg?
I did. I said blarg.
Blarg. Oh. So you do are you doing a Twitch stream while you stream to a non-radio, or is it the Twitch stream and then you archive it and then that goes on and on the radio?
Yeah, basically, I do the Twitch stream for anybody who wants to, you know, watch me reading live. The idea originally had been, you know, I had friends that I don't get to visit very often that they could drop in and watch if they wanted or whatever.
Yeah.
I use the recordings from that. I take the audio off the recordings, and then I edit it into something nice that doesn't have me, you know, stumbling over my words and going back and repeating sentences because I got the emphasis in the wrong place and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, and the worst part is that there's a lot of books out there that do not have the best.
There are currently three other participants in the conference.
And remember, kids, sign up now for your SDF blarg.
Blarg?
Free.
Free blarg.
Hello, Jazzmouse.
Hey, how's it going, SMJ?
Oh, it's going okay. I hope this year gets over soon. That'd be cool.
Yeah, or at least some of the problematic points of it.
There's only up from here.
We hope.
We hope, yes. I heard a news story about locusts in India and South America.
Great.
Or Chile, yes.
I mean, you know, what's next? Super volcano, comet impact?
Yeah, I don't know. Super volcano or comet impact.
Well, I mean, they've
comet
been talking about
be a little bit
they've
more.
Been talking about a possible about us being overdue for some type of volcanic seismic activity in Yellowstone for quite some time.
And I got a friend who studies this. I mean, you know, it's his hobby. It's a hobby of his.
Uh-huh.
Odd guy, but there you go. He says Yellowstone is not the main thing to be concerned about. Right?
Okay.
He says that the two super volcanoes which have a decent chance of blowing their tops in the next 10,000 years, which could be as in could be tomorrow, could be 10,000 years.
Are
Bay of Naples and Sunda Strait.
Interesting.
Ooh, Bay of Naples. That's an interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if. Atlantis will surface.
Mm. Or, well, you know, you think you've got a refugee crisis in the Mediterranean basin now.
Yeah.
Yes. Pompeii, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, he lives up in Canada. He says, you know, he's not worried about either of those two directly because either way, Calgary will get about a centimeter of ash fall over the course of a couple of years. Stratospheric fallout, but the area, you know, south of the Alps would be if the Bay of Naples went, the entire area south of the Alps would be very heavily affected, and, you know, northern Europe would also have quite a lot happen.
What's the standard direction that the wind blows in the Mediterranean? Is there any sort of prevailing? I mean, in North America, we know we have the jet stream, which just kind of sweeps things west to east,
well,
and then swirls it around in the south.
Yeah, from what I recall from my Roman history, the prevailing winds blow in one direction of the Mediterranean part of the year and the other direction the other part of the year.
Interesting.
The Romans were not the world's greatest seamen, and they found that basically they could go east to west half the year and west to east
dictates
the other half.
Where they can conquer, right?
But it, you know, they were not great about sea trade, and that was part of the reason.
Yeah.
So what they could do really depended on the season of the year. And then if I recall correctly, I want to say it's west to east during the winter and east to west during the summer, and that during the spring and autumn the winds get very confused, which I can testify to because I've been in the Mediterranean during the autumn.
Yeah.
When
seasons change things, I mean, that's why we have, you know, stormy weather in the spring and sometimes in the fall, that kind of thing.
But yeah, it switches back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And then the, you know, because, of course, there's some periods of the year when you get these enormous dust storms of the Sahara that blow out into the Atlantic Ocean for hundreds and hundreds of kilometers. Sometimes the dust actually reaches the furthest coast of Brazil, like near Sao Paulo.
Wow. What? Wait, what? I thought we were talking about the Mediterranean. What happened there?
Winds off the Mediterranean, of course, if they blow towards the southwest, will blow over the Sahara Desert.
Right.
And then there's these dust storms that develop in the Sahara can carry, you know, the wind, the air
that
can become yellow for hundreds of kilometers up into the Atlantic.
Gotcha. Oh, okay, yeah.
It also carries spiders.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah.
So it's entirely possible that very light animals like spiders
especially
keenly.
Since spiders have certain spiders have a method of creating sort of like a air sling or something to help carry them further.
Right.
Known as ballooning, but it's more like real extreme parachuting.
Yeah.
And do they realize what they're doing, or are they just kind of freaking out and hoping for the
it's
best?
It's like, oh no, we weren't supposed to go this far.
Right. I mean, the stuff does emit from their
ass. I was just trying to get into the tree across the field.
Right, exactly, and this breeze picked me up. This yellow, dusty breeze. Where am I going?
So,
How's Texas, Publius?
Well, the weather is nice and warm.
That's good.
Our governor continues to have, you know, no interest in the preservation of human life.
Okay.
I mean, you know, people talk about, you know, well, we got to reopen the economy, this, that,
right,
or anything.
Right, yeah.
I keep hearing people talk about a second wave. Well, I have to say, second wave, nothing. You know, that they started relaxing
sure.
restrictions before there had been any downward trend in the number
right.
of
infections. Right, yeah.
Here, anyway.
I thought I saw somebody post on Mastodon today that, you know, the American experience is, you know, we haven't flattened the curve, we've turned it into a half pipe.
Okay.
But I mean, it makes me so disappointed in my country because I have to think of, you know, how America first became a world power. You know, why did America complete the Panama Canal when the French weren't able to?
Are you asking a question, or?
Well, the story, as I understand it, to a great extent, hinges on the fact that the U.S. authorities were able to control the spread of infectious disease among the workers on the canal project, which the French under de Lesseps had not been able to do.
Oh, okay.
The United States Sanitary Commission was really good at stopping the spread of, like, malaria and yellow fever. And similarly, that all those tropical diseases that tend to
mm-hmm.
really sap the vitality of your workforce. And the other thing being that, of course, the Spanish-American War is one of those things that people don't think a lot about now, but it was a real big deal at the time. You know, America was taking on a global power, even if it was pretty much a run-down, beat-up, you know, half-assed global power. And you know, what was the reason? Well, people tell you, William Randolph Hearst wanted a war to sell newspapers, or, you know, there was the thing with the battleship Maine or whatever, but the thing is, reading contemporary accounts, it becomes very clear. The Spanish Empire was not well run. And one of the problems was that every year there would be a yellow fever outbreak in Cuba. And every year that yellow fever outbreak would spread to the Gulf Coast ports of the United States. And every year the American minister in Madrid would make representations to the Spanish court basically demanding that they install a sewer system in Havana in order to reduce the frequency and severity of outbreaks of tropical disease. And the Spanish couldn't be bothered. You know, there were lots of people in America who were sympathetic to the Spanish, to the Cuban independence movement, and who were outraged about the brutality of the Spanish military governors and this and that and the other thing. But the single biggest thing was that there was this wave of infectious disease. And so when I look at it, and when I look and see that the European Union is talking about not letting Americans into the EU because we haven't done enough to control the spread of infectious disease, it makes me so mad, because this used to be one of the pillars of America's power in the world.
Yeah, that it could assert itself to control contagion at one point in time, right?
Yeah. Well, the meth thing is, it's unfortunate how it's going, I don't know if I'm surprised, but I'm kind of taken aback sometimes, because it's like, for me, if you're wearing the mask, it's you're either you can become a target for wearing the mask, and and it's like now it's some kind of antagonizing thing, especially in grocery stores, you know, particular grocery stores, because they, you know, they've made the aisles one way and things like that. So,
mm-hmm.
In that kind of public place anyways, I'm not going to confront anybody or do anything, you know, I'm going to do everything to get out of their way.
Yeah.
But, I've noticed that people just treat each other like shit, especially at the supermarket. And it's like, you know, we all just want to go get in, buy our groceries, and get out. If anybody that has a problem, I'm just going to make sure and get out of the way. I'm not going to make a big deal about it. But
yeah, yeah. It would be nice if people could at least treat each other with a little bit of common courtesy, right?
Yeah, a little bit of decency, a little bit of Midwestern decency, right?
Right.
But it's...
Yeah, I haven't been to the grocery store in over two months now, so yeah, so I'm looking forward to seeing what things are going to be like on this next wave of resupply.
I've come to appreciate canned goods.
Yeah, yeah. Canned goods and dry goods.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, look, the boxes of pancake mix are on sale. I think I will buy two or three.
Right.
Things that are shelf stable for a long time.
Oh yeah.
I guess all the Mormons who are strongly encouraged by church authorities to have 6 months to a year worth of basic supplies at home.
Yeah.
People are looking at each other saying, "This was it.
Yeah.
This is
what we prepared for."
Right. I mean, that was the thing too. Is my parents weren't well-to-do, so they would.
Hello and welcome.
They would buy from the Mormons.
It is now time for
SDFO to VOIP. 5 gallon white containers of rolled oats or rice or whatever.
To join the conversation.
And powdered milk.
Yeah. Powdered milk. Yeah.
That was one of those tells. I said, I can. I can tell you if I'm in a Mormon household by looking at what's on the table.
Mm.
Because there are brands. So, for example, Family Canning brand peanut butter.
Okay.
Interesting.
You will not see that. You will never see it in a supermarket. But Family Canning brand peanut butter, and you turn it around and you look at the label, and it's Family Canning headquarters, it's
somewhere
in Utah.
Provo, Utah.
Yeah.
And it's,
Mm-hmm.
I know what's going on now. But
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's
they're serving the immediate need of their community. So
yeah, and it's also cost effective too. I mean, when you're dealing with food stamps and limited income, it makes sense to go buy
a 55 gallon drum of peanut butter.
No, 55 gallons. No, it wouldn't be that. It'd be less than that, but it would at least be a 5 gallon white tub of rice or oats.
So I was just thinking that's one of those things I like to point out to people because logistics has a certain interest to me, and of course maybe a few more people are becoming interested in it now that they've seen this stupid thing with toilet paper disappearing.
Oh God!
Yeah.
Right, I almost forgot about that. I have a Japanese Toto washlet, so I'm like,
I don't worry about it that much.
I don't.
I was kind of
upset that Toto didn't see this as an opportunity to finally get
entrenched in the American market.
Yeah,
I got a bunch of TV ads, but no, actually,
they did. Okay,
I had my bathroom redone right.
Mm-hmm.
About the same time this all started, and I really wanted to get a.
What's that?
Well, my mother has this. It's not the whole toilet. It's a seat, but it's the same basic thing anyway.
Sure.
I couldn't get them. The back ordered apparently.
Oh man. Okay.
But yeah, I really think Toto should have taken out a whole bunch of TV ads or something.
Yeah.
Basically said, toilet paper? Who that, boss?
Right.
Yeah,
I think there was.
I think there was actually, as you said, a sort of interest in purchasing. Bidets, not particularly that particular brand of washlet, but bidets in general.
They certainly perfected it, though. There are knockoffs in the cheap hotels in Japan that are just—they're horrible compared to the toilet. I mean, they will shoot you in the face. But I was just like, all Toto had to do was do something like toilet paper, 1889 to 1980. We solved this.
Paper is for reading and writing. The Toto washlet is for cleansing.
Incidentally, because this is one of those things I think about as a aspiring space colonist.
Yes.
So one of the things that you don't really get easily, for example, on the moon is paper, right?
Mm-hmm.
Paper is vegetable fiber. It's composed of... He's got a lot of carbon and hydrogen in the composition. It's not easy to provide, necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was thinking the other day, and I came up with a thought. You may realize this. Silica, right? Silica is water-soluble.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, it's not very water-soluble at room temperature and pressure.
No.
But under certain conditions, it's quite water-soluble. Quartz
sure.
minerals, in many cases, have been found to have little bubbles of water trapped in them, indicating which have been used to determine the temperature and pressure at which they formed.
Mm.
So, in principle, you could take short, chopped glass fibers or fused silica fibers, and you could, and I've never seen anyone propose this. This is, as far as I know, a completely new idea, which I am revealing here for the first time.
Pending.
But you could, in principle, immerse and, you know, partially dissolve silica fibers in water. In other words, hydrate them to the maximum extent,
mm-hmm.
like silica gel, obviously, which is hydrated
right.
colloidal silica,
sure.
and then felt them and mat them and then dry them out. And because they were in a hydrated form, they would cross-link. In other words, the outer layers of each fiber would sort of...
Attention on radio listeners. Coming up
it.
At 0300 hours UTC is a PenMic with open mic. Anyone can
paper.
Stream.
Now, of course, this would be useless for most of the purposes we put paper to, because it's not like you could write on it with ink.
Right.
But so far I have come up with one or two different applications, including punched paper tape for data storage.
Yeah. But what do you think about some other type of high temperature pressure printing rather than, ink by hand obviously isn't going to work.
There's all kinds of fun things you could do with it, like laying down if you using a stencil, you could lay down metal on it. You'd like evaporated metal.
Yeah, well, you're essentially reinventing, FR4, right, at that point. But except instead
kind of
drawn fiber, it's felted and matted.
Anyway, like I say, I don't really know how many practical applications it might be. It might have, but the biggest problem I can think of is that it would. Unless you could find a way to accelerate the process, it might take a really long time, which would make it unreasonable. Although possibly adding a certain amount of colloidal silica to the water would make it speed up. Not 100% sure there.
Pugliese, I got a question. I've seen pictures of the ISS toilet. exactly. They haven't solved that problem very well. It's very...
Curling blades!
But what I didn't see is like how does it deal with solid waste?
The short
answer
clear. Is whirling blades. There is an impeller, which
I don't care about once it leaves the body. It's like the transition between leaving the body and what's left.
Yeah. Because
we're talking about toilet paper.
Yeah. So the short answer is not really well. Having whirling blades near to some fairly delicate parts of the anatomy is kind of unpleasant. But it uses in a sense, air suction or an air current to draw the solids and liquids alike towards the impeller.
Okay, and with zero G, that's pretty easy to do.
Yeah, basically suction was the only thing they could figure that would really work. And it's certainly better than the old Apollo-era method, which involved using a plastic bag.
Yeah, I can imagine.
God.
What about
Skylab?
Like survival training in zero-G, right?
What about Skylab? Skylab was kind of like a Cadillac of space labs.
Yeah, I mean, they had everything. You know, they had a shower, which the ISS still doesn't have. But I actually have here the Skylab, what is it called? Crew Systems. Where was it? But anyway, there's a lovely report, biomedical results of Skylab, bioastronautics data book, this thing. NASA Technical Memorandum X-64825. Skylab Crew Systems Mission Evaluation, which contains excruciating detail on all these topics, And it has one of the weirdest typos in it, by the way, that I have ever encountered. I don't know if you've ever read the webcomic Girl Genius by Phil Folio.
No.
But one of the characters attends, allegedly, Transylvania Polygnostic University.
Polygnostic?
Yeah, which is a perfectly good Greek-derived term, of course, for various branches of knowledge, but it sounds very weird. Anyway, so the thing being, in this Skylab document, the word polygnostic appears.
Oh, God.
The statement is made that the washcloths provided were made of polygnostic terry cloth.
Okay.
I don't know how the typist succeeded in typing something so unusual.
Yeah, right. I mean,
waste management system, fecal collection. It's almost the first thing in the report, actually.
Oh, okay, yes. Here we go.
So, yeah, fecal collection. Everyone's favorite activity.
Yeah.
For most people, it's a daily occurrence.
Yeah.
Attention on radio listeners. Coming up at 0300 hours UTC is a Penmic with open mic. Anyone can stream.
With the rotary impeller system, it's perfectly fair to say that with the ISS or the space shuttle...
Can I say something that's just really topical right now these days? Humans have such a short-term memory.
Yep.
I mean, they can't even remember that they have to... Oh, let's go to space. Oh, but we got to poo.
Yeah.
Anyways, go ahead.
So, yes, the fecal/urine collector provided means for collecting both feces and urine using airflow as a gravity substitute to separate the waste material from the body. Urination could be performed either in the standing position or in the seated position at the discretion of the crewman. Urination and defecation could be performed simultaneously if desired. An illustration of the waste management system is provided in figures 19 and 20. The fecal-urine collector functional interfaces are shown in figure 21. Functional interfaces, that's a way to put it.
Ooh, functional interface. How about dysfunctional interface?
Yeah, wow. So yeah, there's even an elaborate chart here of the material flows. That's what we'll call them.
Material science. Ooh.
Yeah. Let's see. Urine receiver loke. Urine receiver yoke. Urine collector drawers.
yoke. Did you say urine receiver yoke?
That is what it says.
Okay. I mean, how is it a yoke?
Well, it's a thing that is positioned... the fecal collector seat is horizontal on the wall, but of course it doesn't matter in zero-G.
Right.
So the urine collector yoke, if you were seated on the fecal collector seat, would be immediately ahead of you.
Okay, yeah. Okay. But I mean, how is it a yoke?
I'm trying to get a better view of this thing.
I imagine some type of retaining clip.
Do you have to steer it? You control it or move it around?
Well, it's really more like a harness, I would imagine. But
okay.
You know, yoke like a bird.
Yeah, I guess that could be a yoke then.
Yeah.
The urine collection equipment was designed to collect and control the urine from the crewman. It had two modes of operation, A, airflow, and B, using a cuff without airflow. The first mode used airflow through a receiver and hose into a centrifuge for air-urine separation and then into a urine collection bag. The second mode used a roll-on cuff into a bag directly without airflow. Figures 26 and 27 illustrate the basic components. And so... What am I looking at here? So, yes, I think the yoke in question is really... Yoke is a weird description for it.
Yeah, maybe coupler?
Yeah.
Well, it's this thing that holds the apparatus in place, essentially.
Mm. Okay.
So there's a... It looks like more like the kickstand on a bicycle than anything else.
Mm.
I mean, I guess you just sort of... So yeah, that was where the collector hose would be retained there.
Hmm.
Anyway, there's an extensive description of all these things because, of course, as part of the biomedical experimentation, they were constantly taking samples, and every 12 hours or whatever, you have to have a sample.
1269.
Let's see. Post-mission assessment. The centrifugal system was the primary method of urine collection used by all crews, with occasional use of the roll-on cuff and urine collection transfer assembly, and all equipment operated satisfactorily. Using a blower separator system, which eliminated the need for cuffs, makes the act of urination a natural act. The bag system was considered good, assuming the procedure called for pooling the urine all day, then dumping. Several of the crewmen even urinated while floating free and upside down, using no restraints, and reported satisfactory results. Just in case you wanted to know that.
It's good to know.
Apparently they did not, in fact, jet across the room.
Considered
1 foot restraint adequate for stand-up urination.
Hmm.
The system remained surprisingly clean and relatively free from unpleasant odors throughout all the missions.
Okay.
Attention on radio listeners. Coming up at 0300 hours UTC is a pandemic with open mic. Anyone can stream.
Failure of the older odor control filter, which was designed for 28 days of operation and had been operating for 51 days at the time the crew reported the odor.
Interesting. Wow. Almost 2 months. That's better than Johnny on the Spot.
But Skylab was a very interesting thing. I mean, the reason why I spent some time with this document was actually to help establish what I would call maximum supply requirements. So, you know, talking about, an initial lunar settlement, if we assume that for the beginning you just have to allocate enough of food, water, air, and so on to be, to meet all your needs.
Yeah.
And so Skylab provides us a base of data for determining that.
True, yeah.
Right. Anyway,
you can figure out how many people over how much time versus how much supply materials they can go for the amount of space and weight.
Right. So since Skylab did everything in the heaviest possible way, Saturn V to throw away, I figure that any figures that I come up with on the basis of Skylab data can probably be revised downward by at least a third and still be realistic.
Yeah, that's a good point, because a lot of things with Skylab, it was just like, let's do everything, let's make the future. And that's what makes Skylab so interesting. I mean, they essentially had gourmet space food, and methods of preparing food, very almost like you would have seen in 2001, mm-hmm. That kind of thing.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, they had the lunch trays that logged into the table and all that,
mm-hmm.
and the food. The hilarious thing, I mean, reading the reports, you had food in cans, and then those cans were packed in cans, and then those cans of cans were packed into the refrigerator. So the packaging, you could probably cut out a third of the mass just on packaging by putting things into, like, foil pouches instead of cans of cans.
As we've found.
I'm kind of a fan of aseptic packs, as it turns out. They're pretty nice.
Mm-hmm. Hey, by the way, if you've seen that thing about Bill Gates, Bill's brain, he talks about when he was a kid, that he knew the astronauts drank Tang, and so he used to get a sugar rush and just eat Tang. He justifies it. He says, the human body has adequate water to hydrate the Tang mix. I don't have to mix it in water. It's just like, I'll put it in the palm of my hand, I'll lick the palm of my hand until my face turns orange.
I think that may be a thing that some kids do. I remember I used to occasionally eat a spoonful of Gatorade powder about that age.
Yeah, I wasn't so much a fan of drink powders, but I used to like to eat granulated sugar straight from the packets as a child.
Whoa.
That's
hardcore.
Chocolate mix sometimes.
Yeah, I need a little bit of that citric acid.
I had a friend that liked to eat Sweet 'n Low straight from the packet.
Ooh.
The metallic aftertaste always killed me.
Yeah,
I can't stand that stuff. But
it's like, wow, this is sweet, and then it's like, oh, this is crap.
Oh, it tastes like an aluminum can.
That bitter aftertaste. Ugh. Equal. All right, well, Open VoIP is openly dead. Over. Sorry.
Yeah.
Coming up. Thank you, Publius. I'm going to have to go listen to the archive to your show.
Okay. Well, I hope you enjoy it.
I will enjoy it. I always enjoy your shows. Very good reading.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All righty. I'm going to drop.
Okay. Have a good night.
Bye now.